this account called I Need God in Every Moment of My Life, and they do merch. And
one of their
pieces of merch is a pair of shorts that says God won't let me die on the butt.
Wait, I need her. Okay, you need to send me that.
It's like weirdly, like it's, I don't want to say weirdly, but it is pretty sincere. Like they are definitely trying to be like, you know, there's like this hot push to be like hot and religious. They're they're spearheading that movement.
Wait, I'm really obsessed. I'm going to look at this right now. What is it called?
I Need God in Every Moment of My Life.
Oh, I have two accounts that are following it that are both satire. I love semi-sincere absurdist content. Like it's the sweet spot, you know.
Yeah, they have a shirt that says the Lord. God loves me and there's nothing I can do about it.
Very that. I heart being Catholic. Wait, I really want this. The heart with the like thorns around it.
Yes, yeah. It's like, are they like successfully converting me to Catholicism because I think they're cool? Like, is this some sort of like papal decree? They're like trying to get like the youth back into Catholicism, because if so, it is working.
Yeah, honestly, consider me converted to Catholic aesthetics, like for sure. It's so dramatic.
Oh my God. This aesthetic, this like affirmations thing that like really like works for me, it, like slots into my brain.
Oh, me too. It's very like lighthearted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we love affirmation-mash, obviously.
Yeah, now that we're in affirmations. Yeah. Opera account.
Dude, that's the most likes you've ever gotten on a picture I looked.
I know. Wait, really? I thought the one where you announced the bleep it out.
256. This is 266. Can you believe?
Wow. The people wanted affirmations. They prayed and we delivered.
Yeah, so that. I really want to find a way. Do you know how like affirmations like negates certain things in their affirmations? Like I am not insane. I am not losing my sense of sanity or whatever. And
or
it's, like,
or
really
for
funny.
Example, I don't receive PFOs.
Right. Exact. So that's one of my favorite parts of their like little way of going about this.
Yeah.
So I'm trying really hard to find a succinct one that's like, I do not get sad when I get to the audition space and it's only coloratura sopranos waiting to audition. Or like, I do not resent the ratio of basses to sopranos.
I like that one. I'm going to write that down right now. The one I like that I'm still workshopping is I don't lose my marbles at summer festivals.
That's great. That's great.
They are lost and never to be found.
My two big pieces of news from this week are I now only have sunscreen from Hong Kong and I now only have toothpaste from Japan.
Wait, you didn't tell me about the toothpaste.
Yeah. Okay. So, I've already told Perry, but like everyone should follow this. I'm not talking in third person. It's really important that I share that up top. Follow somebody whose name is Charlotte. And I think the last, like, I
everyone
think the other...
follow at Shari Miss Jackson. Yeah. It's this really cool account.
Yeah, it's really hip and happening. She posts once every 3 months. There's this account for skincare. I forget what her actual name is, but her handle is like Charlotte Parlor. And she's a chemist and she has like really legit opinions about skincare products and like which ones are kind of just marketing and which things are like provable points about like what is worth spending money on in skincare. Anyway, she talks a lot about how we have like really shitty SPF situations in this country and like most other countries are very far ahead of us, but we have not approved any other patents other than the one we've been using forever. And it's like doesn't work very well and makes your skin just like pasty. So she's like been listing all of these really cool non-US sunscreens to get and I now have them and I'm like moisturized, I'm looking dewy. It's not like I'm putting on like white paint on my face every day. I'm living my best life. I'm doing this like Biore stuff. It's like kind of like a serum almost. Like there's no whiteness at all. Yeah,
that's
it's
insane.
Crazy. Yeah, it's like really, they call it a sun gel, a lot of them, to like get past, like you can't use the word sunscreen in this country if it's not like da 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 da. Anyway, so that's my sunscreen news. And then my toothpaste news. This is such a random thing. Oh my God, I'm obsessed. I've had such a like a body care month. I don't know why. I think it's like Taurus season. So basically, NASA in the 70s developed this toothpaste like for going to space or whatever. I don't know. And Japan was like, I think we're down with that. So we're going to like do that and use that thing. And I forget what it's called. It's a really long name that starts with an H. It's basically this like synthetic material that mimics the mineral, like enamel, whatever in your teeth. And it's literally U.S. studies have shown that it is comparable to fluoride, but fluoride, like, you shouldn't really use
you shouldn't use that much if you're pregnant.
I mean, people have allergies to it. If you use it too much, like, you get fluorosis. Like, it's kind of wackadoodle, but it also works.
I love how this is like both science and also so lovingly close to conspiracy.
Yeah, it's conspiracy adjacent. Totally. I know, it's incredible, because I was like looking at like newer toothpaste. I don't fucking know why. And that's what I learned, is like fluoride is legit. Like, a lot of people can't fucking use it, but you need something to kind of like help your like teeth, like be teeth or whatever. Mm-hmm. So companies here have started using this ingredient that Japan has been using for like 50 years with like no fucking problem, and India. And we're just behind, because like we stay behind. So now my toothpaste is fluoride free, but using like an equivalent ingredient that is non-toxic. Wow. So I have officially like beat the final boss of conspiracy theories and met them on the other side with science. And
the
I'm
next thing
the
is you need to stop drinking tap water. You need to just have tap water with whatever
Babe.
That chemical is.
Babe, I got my zero water right here in the shot. She's right here with me.
Charlotte is fluoride free since 93.
I know. And I was like, you know what? Like, if any like conspiracy theory, can you hear the water pouring? That's so ASMR. If any conspiracy theory was true about that, that would just be like a huge fucking bummer. But in the meantime, like, I'm protected. So, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I don't really have like any sort of news. I, as Charlotte mentioned, I've been using the Supergoop sunscreen. I've been in New York the past 2 weeks, and I've gone a little buck wild, and I've re-upped on my Biologique Recherche. Mm. I've re-upped on a bunch of, like, I like bought multiples of products just to like have and
oh,
hold.
I love doing that.
My life is pretty hard right now.
Yeah, me too. So much to juggle. I'm juggling a lot of different serums and toothpastes.
Oh, so this is another chit-chat. Did we say that?
Oh, yeah. This is a chit-chat. We do have a big ep coming up
at some point in the future.
We have it written down, but it's next. The next thing we're doing is a big episode.
Yeah.
Then probably another little chitty-chatty, then another big episode. It's a busy mm-hmm. little sum-sum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also some, like, fun things happening for our one-year anniversary.
I can't believe it.
I know. I'm really excited.
Me too.
And yeah, lots of little things coming down the pike this summer. So stay tuned. Mm-hmm. We have a few things to talk about today. Two like meteor, and then two like things we just want to bring attention to and like be like, whoa.
Correct.
Yeah. So the first thing is, I think somebody sent this to us in March.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
even February. But we tried, whatever. It's happening now. We're talking about it now. And it's a great timing, because there's actually some more additions than there were in February. So Ithaca College is going through something that a lot of higher education institutions are going through and like will be going through in the next few years. But what's happening there is like so intense and really like one of the first of its kind. So I think it's kind of important. Like, I have found it useful to tune in, because I know it's not the last we're going to hear of something like this happening, as sort of an example of what can happen. Ithaca College is trying to cut down on costs because their enrollment is decreasing slightly, which is similar to a lot of colleges. However, it's really problematic how they're going about it, and really sketchy, particularly around like spending of the endowment and the Board of Trustees versus just like making random budget cuts to like people who work there, like getting rid of faculty. And right. They're not really taking the faculty into consideration and their opinions into consideration. It's just kind of like a unilateral, not super transparent decision on the part of administration. And it's just like highly, highly upsetting, like how easily it's being done, and that there's not really much that can be done about it other than like organizing, but that's already happening. It's just really scary and weird and sad. I just wanted to talk about it for a minute and kind of explain what's going on, so we can maybe all keep our eyes on it. Because this, the reason it has to do with the pod, as it were, is they're cutting a lot of majors and schools and faculty, and one of the schools or one of the programs they're cutting is the entire graduate program for music. So every MM in performance, MM in conducting, all of it, MFA, gone. It's all gone. And
MFA is gone?
Yeah. So I have a list. What is that? A little Goog doc, a fine arts. I think it's like an arty thing.
Okay.
A little arty thing.
In my head, it's like writing, like an MFA in writing.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's also, yeah, fine arts. Like, I think that includes, you're probably right. I think it includes a few things. So eliminating graduate programs, all music graduate programs are cut in performance and conducting, in composition, Suzuki pedagogy and string performance, and MFA in, oh, I see. MFA, it doesn't, it like messed up the Google Doc. No, it's MFA in like art, image.
Okay.
Text, Master of Fine Arts. Image text. I don't know what the fuck that is. It's like, feels like it's like a computery MFA, but yeah, MFA in image text. I don't know what the fuck, but.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of other things that are happening. I can't bring attention to all of it right now, but there's a giant fucking list if you Google it. But one thing they're doing is 116 full-time equivalent faculty positions. So full-time equivalent means if you lay off two adjunct that both work 20 hours or whatever, like that's the equivalent of a full-time. So that doesn't mean it's 116 faculty. It could be double that or triple that.
I couldn't
easily.
Believe it when you told me that. First of all, that's like so insulting. It's yeah. Like you do half of a full-time faculty. Like you are worth mm-hmm. this. I don't mm-hmm. know. It's weird.
It is weird. There's a lot of like, okay. So it's obviously like researchers, teachers, advisors, mentors, writers. Like there's a lot of like really important, there's a really important like microbiome in a college campus that is so far beyond like an individual position, right? And so it's right. losing a culture. It's losing a like a memory. If there's a word for this, but like the history of a school that's like within the memory of the people that are working there, like living memory of like how the school functions and like its history, like that is like irreplaceable. So the reason this is like so sad and sketchy as a picture of like how higher education just fails its students and like focuses on profits is that there's a $24 million deficit right now at Ithaca College, and the proposed cuts to faculty and programs would save maybe $7 million with absolutely no transparent information given to the community as to then how that would help them post-firing all these people, post, right. like, laying off
like,
all these people.
And then what?
And then what? How does that then help with that deficit? Because if it feels like it would just, like, absolutely disintegrate the worth of the degree and anybody wanting to go there for right. any good reason.
Sure.
And, like, the other reason it's very scary and sketchy is because the Ithaca College was given $1.5 million for an infrastructure expansion only if they could pledge $4.7 million. And they did. They pledged $4.7 million for an infrastructure expansion with no, like, exact timeline of when that, like, extra few buildings is going to start raking in money for the college. And I don't know
who's
going to
fill them up,
right? Right? While they're still, like, beating everybody over the head that they desperately need to do budget cuts or they're going to, like, go under. So they're not really, like, explaining any of how this is helpful. And it's really sad because, like, I read an opinion piece in the Ithacan, which I am now, like, it's number one, like, internet traffic reader. But this person, this sophomore, was like, we have a great, like, center for environmental justice or research or whatever. And, like, why are we not building on that and, like, creating, like, a really exciting hub for people who are interested in studying this to come, or people with cross-disciplinary interests to come and study all these different things? Like, there's no attempt to appeal to make enrollment go up. It's just about like getting rid of huge amounts of faculty,
right?
And the reason this is like, besides music being just gone, the other thing that's really sad and interesting about it to me is that there was a union built not too long ago of contingent faculty members at Ithaca College, which includes like adjunct and part-time. And their union contract is set to expire May 31st. So they're currently in the midst of all of this trying to be like, okay, whoever you laid off, you need to help them with unemployment benefits. You need to help them find work because a lot of these people have visas that will be lost if they are sure. laid off, which they have been. And yeah, like help them find work, whatever. And the biggest thing, which I found fascinating, is, which reminds me of when Opera Idaho released, or like the people, the young artists at Opera Idaho left and then like new artists were hired. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things in this contract is saying you need to take back this staff if you have the ability to hire people. You cannot then go hire sure. new people.
That's really that's smart.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's basically impossible to get those jobs anyway. So that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. The music department's just like gone. They're losing like culture, mentors, like for yeah. no discernible financial reason.
Yeah. And after we talked this morning about it, I was like making some lunch and I was thinking about like, how would I feel if Oberlin closed its conservatory? Like, mm-hmm. it would feel like such a slap in the face. It would feel like I have this thing on my resume that like doesn't exist anymore. Like right, this right. venerated institution. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand that like shit comes and goes, like nothing. I definitely see these institutions as like having been born in biblical times, you know. I feel like sure. they've all lasted forever and I can't believe it when like something folds. Mm-hmm. I understand that things do, but it still like sucks, especially when you look into the nitty-gritty and you see that that there are some questionable choices being made and priorities yeah. that are not necessarily your priorities. Right. As an alumni, I would be really upset.
Totally. And like that's, I don't understand, like the point of an endowment for these very old schools is that you don't touch it. It just gets bigger and you're fine forever. That's like how right. like money works, right? That's how like rich, like that's how wealth works in this country. So it's like, it's very weird.
It's another form of hoarding, like this wealth yeah. hoarding, which interestingly, the early liberals were very against. Mm-hmm. I want to say like Adam Smith was like, it is a sin to hoard silver and not like put it into the economy, mm. which is very much not how we live our lives anymore.
That's really interesting that you're saying that, because a lot of the articles that I was reading about this were discussing neoliberal austerity and like the role of neoliberalism in the way that they're doing these budget cuts. And it's just like, that's how it is. You got to do what you got to do. And it's like, right. can we do something that's not this? Like, why are we acting like this is the only solution? And it's just like this blatant like destruction of what is for like what, I don't know, like the free market. I don't fucking know. It's just so fucked up.
The bottom line is seen. It's like the bottom line is this a priori, like it's money. What are you going to do?
Right.
Operates off of that assumption. Mm-hmm. And to question that is like to question what like everything is standing on. But it's ironic because as we kind of talked about, like, does music operate with that bottom line? Like it kind of does, and right. we don't want it to. And there's mm-hmm. like this constant tension.
Right. And I feel like the tension is here too, because it's like, how do you put a price on knowledge? How do you put a price on teaching or an education? Like, should you? How do you? And it feels like the Board of Trustees is just concerned with their investment and the endowment growing and their investment growing. And like, I don't really understand like how a Board of Trustees can be full of such like selfish people. Is it because it's like their fucking money? It's like not, though. An endowment existed far before them, so I don't really get it.
I mean, I'm sure they rationalize it somehow and they can sleep at night perfectly fine, and it seems right. like the best course of action for them and for the institution they're working for, but mm-hmm. I struggle to understand how they get to those conclusions.
Exact. And like, I guess it's worth noting the committee that created this plan to sustain Ithaca College was made up exclusively of admin positions that like, in my understanding, barely exist, like provost, dean, like co-dean, provost, assistant, like I don't know, like, and 9 new administrative positions have been added since this whole thing started at full salary. So that's hot. And when they said that there were salary cuts and administrative position cuts, they have not been transparent about how many or how or for how long. So like everybody who teaches at the school and does the labor that they are selling, which is teaching at a school, is being kept absolutely in the dark and full of paranoia about the job security that they have. And the graduate program for music is gone, and it's fucking weird.
So I remember one article you sent me a while ago. They're like going to help everyone who's still at the school graduate, but then they're not like admitting any new people anymore. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. So if you're still there, like the course options have like hugely diminished, and people who literally can't take certain courses, advisors are just having to like scramble and just figure out new, basically new things to do to like help them figure out how to graduate. But they're not taking what they were originally going to take to graduate.
Jesus Christ.
It's very awkward.
But the undergrad music still exists. It's just graduate.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I mean, I assume they had undergraduate music.
Yeah, I know
they
people
must,
who
right?
went there for undergrad, but I
well,
don't
then,
know.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't part of like the conservatory.
Yeah, maybe it's just like classes.
Maybe it's a BA.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Like it's not a BM.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, there's just like a lot of anxiety among faculty right now. And I'm just, the unilateral governance is just really wild.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, Perry and I were talking about this. It's really interesting. Contingent faculty, like part-time or adjunct, don't have a lot of job security to begin with. And things like this, they can be really manipulated by administration to, like, they're just really nervous about losing their jobs. It was hard to get it in the first place. And I think looking at young artists in the opera world through the lens of looking at how adjunct faculty are treated at the level of like a university, like there's a lot of overlap and a lot of interesting discussions. And in terms of like kind of understanding your labor and like the way you should be treated through a lens, I think looking at how adjunct faculty have organized and like written about kind of the value of their work and how they're being exploited, there's a lot of like cross pollination there that
definitely.
I think could be happening.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. Yeah. It's like this, like, the precarity of their labor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's everything's very unsure. I mean, if you're an adjunct faculty, you don't know if you're going to be teaching the semester after you're currently teaching, right? That's like kind
right.
of a thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to like do your best and hope for the best, and who knows, it's coming down in your future. Who knows? That's, and you know, it's very much similar to how we live our lives as musicians. It's almost like gig labor, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
These adjunct people after
yeah.
going through years of school and being professionals in their field,
yeah.
being experts.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
It is. And I think the other similar part that you're touching on that a lot of other job markets don't have the same relationship to is the absolute overqualification.
Right.
I mean, listen, people who get internships are usually overqualified. Like that actually, I think there is probably a bigger discussion about that across the board. But in opera and in as an adjunct faculty, the amount of education to even be able to apply to those things is astronomical.
Right.
It is really a specific thing because it's so niche. It's so specific. It's so many years of training. I would argue that those two kind of stand alone in this really
mm-hmm.
interesting way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I think there's definitely everyone's overqualified. And I remember when I was applying for like random jobs in New York, it would be
mm-hmm.
like master's required. And it's like, for
why?
This? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, I mean,
oh
I have
God.
It. I have a master's in music. But I shouldn't need to have one for this job that I'm not even going to fucking get.
Right.
But yeah, it's like insulting. And it's also, I feel
yeah.
like I'd have to talk to more like adjuncts about this, but I feel like there's a similar like moralization of your work. Like they're doing something out of like the love for either the field or for their students
mm-hmm.
or some combination of both. And they should be lucky that they're teaching at all.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's another really great example. And like teachers spending, I mean, that goes with teachers across the board, even like elementary school teachers, but like spending
right.
their own
totally.
Money on supplies
yes.
and stuff. Oh my God.
After hours planning lessons
yeah.
outside of the teaching hours.
And if you don't do that, you're like weird.
Yeah.
And
right.
you're like kind of looked down upon. It's like, oh, that's not hot. The last thing I wanted to mention about what you just brought up, that just, I saw a TikTok last week discussing, disability rights and the way that people with disabilities are treated in this country. The word hero comes to mind a lot. The word brave comes to mind a lot.
Sure.
And this woman who writes about disability rights in this country is like pretty famous on TikTok. I follow her. She duetted a video discussing this concept in relationship to mothers and being like, oh, mothers are always called heroes, da da da. She jumps in and is like, okay, so this happens to people with disabilities a lot, and I think it's really important that we talk about something, which is that if someone's calling you brave and someone's calling you a hero, that means they're willing to let you die. They're calling you a martyr.
Interesting.
They're saying, like, you're, like, absolute, like giving everything for not being able to receive anything for it is inspiring to them, and they will let you die for that inspirational thing.
Wow.
And, like, I feel like that's something that we do with teachers as well. And even young artists where it's, like, I feel like any exploited group, we're just like, wow, like, look at you. Like, you're really doing it for the love of teaching. Or like, wow, you're really doing it for the love of singing. It's like, I'm not doing shit for shit. Like, I am not here to inspire you. Like, I need to get paid.
Yeah.
It's like not that deep. I'm not here to be your, like, you know, what's that like show that everyone cries at? Like Us or whatever. Like, I'm not here to be your like TLC, like la-di-da. Anyway, that fucking blew my mind. I feel like it's a whole other component of like the death cult of America that like anybody who we decide is like brave, we're really just like kind of casting away their humanity in a way. Yeah. Just being like, you're just a story to me now. I'm not going to do anything to save you. I'm watching this movie of you.
Very interesting.
Blew my fucking mind. Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're interested in reading the Ithacan like I am, stay tuned because shit's going crazy. And I don't know. Like, I think this is going to start happening at more colleges. So I was really excited that somebody sent this in because I know this is not the last of this. Fucking opera majors. Fuck,
we are not long for this world.
No. So, like, I don't know. Keep your ear to the ground. Is that a thing people say? Yes. Ear to ye old ground about like other schools where this is happening. Please let us know if you hear any chatter about this at your school.
Yeah. So this next thing we don't really have a whole lot of information about. Actually the person who sent it in was saying that it basically hasn't been covered at all. Which was, you know, it's interesting, but also made it hard for me to like get a grasp on like the whole story. But I wanted to give the information that we have that the person sent in. So there is this professor, he's a tenured professor and countertenor at University of Toronto. His name is Daniel Taylor. And actually, the person who sent this in also said that he was a recent recipient of the Order of Canada, which he said was the highest civilian honor. So he is like a very well-respected man in Canada. He has been accused of, I'm not totally sure if he has been accused of assault, but at the very least, sexual misconduct and inappropriate behavior. And a lot of students have gotten together and made a lot of noise about their experiences with him. I had trouble finding those experiences. I suspected that it's kind of like because it hasn't like broken the shell of like.
Right. People aren't being interviewed in a formal way yet.
Yeah. So I was reading Facebook posts and then was kind of uncomfortable retelling those stories here. But yeah. I will say the stuff I was reading was very disturbing, very upsetting, taking advantage of people during master classes, that sort of thing.
Jeez.
So University of Toronto has sent out emails saying that like they have very intense and stringent sexual harassment policy. And I found a lot of posts on Instagram that were like standing in solidarity with victims of sexual harassment and assault. So I'm glad that people are like standing up. But I also,
and there's like noise being made.
Yes, definitely noise. I was searching the hashtag U of T hashtag and U of T music hashtag. Yeah, I mean, maybe we could contact some people who have been speaking out. It was just hard. I feel like they're on like locked accounts. They're just, you know, they're not public figures. Yeah. It's not being spoken about. But
yeah,
just wanted to like bring a little light to that. And thank you to the person who sent it out. It seems like this guy is a real monster and he's a tenured professor.
Which is pretty upsetting. Yeah, it's really not chill at all.
Yeah. And if anyone has any more information that they would like to share with us, we won't share things if you don't want it to be shared, or we'll keep you anonymous, but just, you know, whatever you would like to share would be great.
Yeah, I'd like to keep following this and see how we can like further amplify whatever needs to be amplified. That's really intense. Oh God, thank you guys for sending in this stuff. This stuff really like deserves to be spoken about, and like it's so hard, you know, to keep up with everything.
And also these circles, it's weird because like music is a very small world and a very huge world. And I feel like I'm connected to so many people and have gotten more connected, you know, through doing this project and stuff, but there's like bubbles that haven't met each other yet.
Right. Exactly.
So there's stuff going on in these bubbles. It's all happening. And I wish we could all coalesce into like a big bubble.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll be following that story.
We literally will.
Yeah.
Another story we just wanted to amplify and follow is, I'm going to pull up his original text just so I can like make sure I don't miss anything. So this has been covered like in the news, and this person has been interviewed in the news. So I'm going to use his name because he's become very public about this. So I think that's probably okay. But Jashanti Henry is a sophomore at Eastman School of Music. And Jashanti was sitting in Eastman at Betty's Cafe, which I guess is like an Eastman like place or whatever. And he was approached by a public safety officer because another student said he looked suspicious. These are his words. I'm just changing the pronoun to he from I. Yes, he's a sophomore at ESM and native of Rochester, New York, and has been involved with the Eastman community since 2010. And he says, this is not the first nor the second, but the third time that this has happened. So he has a video on his Instagram of this happening. The Eastman Black Students Union has posted a letter. I took a screenshot of it. So Eastman's BSU says, enough is enough. The incident with Jashanti Henry on May 11th shines yet another light on the culture and environment here at Eastman. The issue isn't just faulty campus security measures. It's the inherent biases other people have against us as Black students. We don't feel safe. We don't feel heard. We are tired. In their bio, it's Eastman BSU. In their bio, there's a petition where you can learn more about what happened and their demands of Eastman moving forward. And you can sign it and repost some of what they did. Oh, I now have pictures of cats. Let me get past those pictures of my cat. Some of the things that they're saying they would like to see is that everybody has to swipe in with their ID card. The BSU of Eastman is primarily a student-led organization, but they would like to have a faculty advisor to support their organization with any endeavors, issues, or concerns that may arise. I love that for them. There needs to be a diversity officer / administrative position on Eastman campus, and Eastman students of color should be part of that search committee for that position. BIPOC students need a physically safe space on Eastman campus that they can call their own, and the bias incident report system that is in place for the University of Rochester has proven to not be effective as it should be, and they need a new system. And the last one is, public safety must only engage with situations of suspicious activity, such as a person with a visible weapon, damaging and or stealing property, disrupting public order, et cetera, and not just biases and opinions of who they deem to be a threat to the Eastman community.
Right.
So I just wanted to read really fast, and then we can, like, get into it. I just wanted to make sure I got the info in.
Sure, yeah.
So Eastman wrote a statement back, a message from the dean. Some of the things, the actions they're taking immediately to address this incident, they're doing an investigation into the incident, according to their practices of, like, discrimination, harassment, et cetera. The public safety officer has resigned pending the outcome of the investigation. Starting tomorrow, there will be an additional sensitivity training for all university public safety officers. And there's a reexamination that will be conducted of their procedures and training and regarding requesting IDs. So we just wanted to highlight that. Go to Eastman BSU and sign that petition and keep up to date with these undergrad students. I think they're almost all undergrad students trying to kind of like raise awareness for what happened. And there's a long history, I think, in both Rochester and at the school of like a complicated relationship among administration and BIPOC students. And yeah, I don't know. I've been learning a little bit about it, and we just wanted to kind of highlight it for a minute here.
And something that I asked Charlotte about earlier that I thought, I mean, I was a little confused about it, so maybe other people might be too. I had trouble imagining like what this kid was asking for versus what was already happening. Like when he, in the change.org petition, it says you need people to like swipe into the school. And I was like, what do you mean you need people to do that? Like, isn't that happening? And Charlotte was like, Perry, you went to school in Manhattan where they have like huge barriers and you're not getting in without an ID no matter what, basically. And I kind of forgot that that isn't the case, even though my undergrad was kind of like that, but my undergrad was in the middle of nowhere. Right. So I assumed like all city schools had this sort of thing implemented where like you're swiping in and you will not be allowed entry unless you have like an ID that has a barcode that works.
Right. And it's funny because Boston is just like New York light. And like, it's such a perfect example of like a slightly more relaxed environment while still being in a city. Mm-hmm. And I was saying like Boston Conservatory, like there's security at the front, and like, I don't know, there's certain security officers that would ask everyone for an ID, but that's like not really what happened, and it would be very easy to sneak by without doing it. And there was no like system in place. Like there's just doors and you just walk in. So, mm-hmm. and like the security officer is off to the side. So like there's no real like standardized way. And so in that way, like if that security officer who was getting paid like minimum wage and was just, you know, on their, it's like an overnight shift sometimes, they, you know, they're just looking around. And I don't know, if you saw someone who was like 80 walking in, you might be like, are you okay? Like, where are you going? And like, that might be an example of like maybe a slightly less, like a slightly more innocuous example of profiling that's just like, hey, like, are you, do you want to be in this school for students right now? Is this where you want to be? Like, right? But like, so, but that leads to an inherent slippery slope of like, right, not right. good stuff. So I think it's really helpful for them to talk about like regulating that so that there's no chance of like someone just like going off of their own ideas of who they do need to check ID for and not check ID for. I mean, it's just ripe for not cute things, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that like a more stringent policy actually seems to make the most sense for this, you know, just being a little bit more rigorous, just so there's no opportunity for this sort of indiscretion and yeah. kind of letting your own personal biases take over, which is obviously what's happening, especially this guy. Is the third time that's happened to him? Like, how absolutely demoralizing must that be?
And he's like, been going there since he was since 2010, 11
and
he's
years. Only a sophomore.
Yeah. So wait, the reason he's doing it is because he had a full scholarship through a Pathways program with Rochester City School District. Like,
oh, so he was like really young going there too.
Yeah, and he plays flute, and he's like been there for like a really long time. Like, he got a full scholarship to Eastman for flute as like a kid. So he's like a badass. And he said, as a School of the Arts graduate, Henry says attending Eastman was his dream from a young age. So we want the best for him, and I hope that he's finding the support and healing that he needs right now, because I'm sure that was very upsetting. But I think the least we can do is sign that petition and just kind of elevate his voice. I actually just looked, and I mean, he came up because his name like is a unique there wasn't like a lot of people with his name on my like search. And then I saw that like 5 of my friends follow him. So I think this is already starting to like spread about, and people are starting cool. to figure out what's going on, which, yeah, we just wanted to bring attention and say that like we stand with him, and I want to hear him play flute, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I read a cool little thing in the Times. Is actually from like last month, but then there are a couple of updates. So San Francisco is rolling out basically a universal basic income for artists. They're only choosing, I believe it was like 180 artists. Hang on.
Wow.
Let me pull out.
Oh my god, I'm so curious who they are. I hope they're literally all drag queens.
130 eligible artists. So this year, 130 eligible artists will be receiving $1,000 a month from the San Francisco whatever government for at least 6 months. And this article also talked about how they're doing a similar thing in St. Paul, Minnesota, and they're giving $500 checks to 25 local artists for the next 18 months. And so I read this and was very excited about it, also because I've been thinking about UBI a little bit, and I actually just read What's Wrong with a Free Lunch by Philippe von Parijs. I don't know if I'm pronouncing. I think
von
he's from
Parijs de Christina.
I think he's Dutch. So the J, I don't know what the Dutch.
Oh, I literally know
Dutch.
Exactly what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like weird and fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I feel like this is very exciting. I feel like one of the main pushbacks against UBI is that it hasn't been tested, and so things might go badly, and this seems like a pretty interesting test. And I was looking into it on San Francisco specifically, and San Francisco has actually been doing this for a while, and they've done UBI programs for kids who are just exiting foster care and for pregnant mothers as well. As far as I can tell, to success, or at least not to failure.
Right.
And they also like explicitly mentioned in the article that 75% of the recipients would be people of color, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just wanted to like chat about UBI for a second, especially as it relates to artists, because I think there's this big the debate between people who are interested in some sort of social support in this way is between UBI and a job guarantee. A job guarantee would promise anyone who wants a job, which some say is a better solution than a UBI because a UBI for a lot of people really feels like a handout and people really don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. So a job guarantee, you're guaranteed money, but you got to put in a little bit of labor. And that makes you allowed to access the money in some people's heads. I don't necessarily agree with that. And neither does this guy, Philippe Von Parrish, which is interesting because so a UBI obviously is seen as like a pretty left position. It's associated with Andrew Yang.
Which like we are not associated with.
This is not a pro Andrew Yang podcast, I promise.
UBI is more than Andrew Yang. That's on that. Please understand.
So Von Parrish just kind of looks at our current system and is like, some people have a lot of fucking money to spend and some people don't have any at all. I don't think that should be allowed. It doesn't make any sense to me. There are a bunch of other guys who wrote about this. I don't know that much about them because I didn't read them. But this guy believes that everyone in the country should receive a basic income. That's like, you know, totally standard. Doesn't matter if you have $1 billion or you have no money at all.
Right.
You will get $1,000 a month. So I think you can kind of tell that one of the biggest objections to UBI is the fact that it's not money that was earned, that it would be a handout. And some people think that it would make people work less hard because they're more comfortable.
As they should.
So he says, this is the quote from Von Parrish, "A second frequent objection is that a UBI would have perverse labor supply effects. In fact, some American income maintenance experiments in the 1970s actually showed these effects. The first response should be, so what? Boosting the labor supply is no aim in itself. No one can reasonably want an overworked, hyperactive society." And I like really made me break out into a smile when I read that because I was like, yeah, but literally fuck that.
Yeah, and I mean research has proven this for years, no? That like the amount of work, the amount of hours we work absolutely has an inverse relationship. Like we're now getting diminished returns for the amount of hours
and the
amount of work that we do. So like it's completely like factual. Like we should not be working this much.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
No.
It's like this obsession with growth. Actually, I think I've told you this before, but it's something that always stuck in my head. I remember when my dad was talking to me about his company, he was like, one of the scariest things is that every single year you need to show growth. Even if you did like astronomically amazingly well the year before, you have to do better the next year. And that is like so limiting and scary and intense.
Yeah.
And there's just this need for like exponential growth, exponential consumption. Otherwise, you're failing. If you're doing the same, you're failing.
Right. That's actually funny you say that. You just reminded me. I had this summer where I worked in a specialty grocery store just like doing inventory. And it's like literally I just listened to podcasts all day and it changed my entire. It's like how I got into birth work. Like whatever. It was a crazy time.
Cool.
It was like 8 hours of podcasts a day. And one I listened to, I never forgot. And it was about, it was called Donut Economics. It was a TED Talk. And it was basically how like we should be aiming for like, you know, a sustainable amount. It, like somehow this donut image plays into it, but it's basically like we're not trying to grow things. We're trying to like stay in this bubble of like we're making enough, not too much, not too little. And like growth is inherently just like stupid.
Right.
And she was like, you don't want a growth in a lump on your breast. Like
right.
You don't want a growth in this and that. Like is growth always good? Like eventually isn't it just festering? Like
that's
it's not.
So funny that she made that comparison. Have you ever read Susan Sontag, Illness is Metaphor?
No, but I'm obviously obsessed already. It's giving me Carl Jung. It's giving me somatic experiencing. It's giving me like, yes.
It's beautiful. She makes a lot of comparisons, like the idea of like when you have consumption, you have to like leave the city and go into the country to kind of like breathe that good air. And she does a lot of comparing of cancer to cities that like this these growths inside these countries that become like too
not enough cleaning out of things.
Right.
Not
yeah.
enough like yeah. yeah. Wow. That's fucking crazy.
I should reread. I read it in college. I gotta reread it.
Oh, I'm gonna totally fucking read that. That is so interesting.
I'll send it
That's
to you.
That's really up my little sweet little alley. Anywho.
Going back to UBI. So Von Parrish outlines three little good reasons he thinks UBI is the way to go. So he says that the problem with capital and investment income, and this is where he's like basically kind of a libertarian in a lot of ways, is not that it exists, but that too few have access to it.
Mm.
And that if more people were given the funds and therefore ostensibly the opportunity to engage in like the market, mm-hmm. it would be better for everyone. And I mean, I think this is pretty self-evident. It like is almost, I mean, maybe it's not, but to me it's very self-evident that one of the benefits of the upper class is that they have extra funds to fall back on and therefore are not solely dependent on wages. And
passive income streams.
Yeah,
baby.
He argues that the extra funds are what spur innovation.
Mm.
And it's an interesting twist on this. I've said libertarian way too many times in this episode, but it is an interesting twist on this libertarian money is what drives innovation. Money is the only reason anyone does anything. The only reason anything good happens in the world is because someone is getting paid to think about it.
Mm.
But von Paris basically says the safety to basically dream is what's innovation.
Well, that's more supported.
I mean, at least to me, it rings so true. I mean, I think that definitely people do really well. Like, people invent a lot of things because of money. Like, I'm not denying that at all. But I think we would invent more interesting and varied things if people weren't inventing solely to make money.
Yeah, and it doesn't really lead to innovation always either.
Yes,
totally. Just trying to serve money.
Oh my God, yes. So actually, not to get on another tangent, but this guy, Joseph Stiglitz, talked about how, okay, so going back, Milton Friedman, one of his reasons for why capitalism is good is because there have been so many geniuses during capitalism. For example, Shakespeare. For example, Albert Einstein.
Einstein was a socialist. What the
which
fuck?
Literally, it makes no sense because
it's
also,
the dumbest thing.
Were these people even rich? No.
No. There's no corollary. What, you're saying like smart people have existed throughout time?
Yeah.
Like, cool.
Yeah,
there's no relationship.
Yeah. So Joseph Stiglitz, who is contemporary. He's still alive, I believe. The book I read of his is from 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about how actually those people are, if anything, like not given advantages. He gives the example of like Alan Turing as this man who was persecuted. He, you know, kind of saved the Western world, sort of. And he was persecuted. He was chemically castrated.
Oh my gosh.
And he's a genius.
Right.
But he says the people who are rewarded are the ones who are the best at gaming the system. The ones
yeah.
who, like, have the smartest way to cheat.
Right.
are the ones who succeed. And it is a type of intelligence. He doesn't
I was about to
like,
say, it is a form of creativity.
Right.
But it's not a form of truth.
Right.
It's not a form of, like, I don't have any human experiential interest in that other than,
exactly.
like, wow, great job doing
yeah.
that, I
Good
guess.
Good job, Bill Gates. You cheated the whole system.
Yeah, like,
and it's,
great.
And he's, like, they're smart people, definitely.
Mm-hmm,
but it's
totally.
A very specific type of smart person who has benefited in this society.
Mm-hmm.
Just interesting. It's a total side note. But
oh, I love that. I love that. I was also thinking about how, like, I mean, this is like Maslow's hierarchy of like blah de blah, but also mm-hmm. just in general, the way the brain works, you need to feel safe and relaxed and capable of surviving
totally,
in order
yes.
to access your creative self. That is like, mm-hmm. that's provable through research. So like, it makes perfect sense that like by believing you're safe and you can survive and you're not just concerned with your survival, you can then access like parts of yourself that have like creative ideas. Like that's, it's so nonsense. Like I can't. There's so much research to prove that like the way we like teach children is not really effective. The way that we go about our work hours is not really effective. Like, and we're just not like admitting it to ourselves sometimes. It's like so funny to me. Like UBI makes perfect sense.
And greatness does come from desperation a lot of the time. But if we can achieve greatness through other means, I think that is worthwhile because I would rather people not feel desperate.
Yeah. And also like trauma doesn't always make you stronger. A lot of the time it makes you weaker.
Yeah.
So like it's it'd be great if we like didn't have to do that for people to like be adrenalized to come up with a idea. Like
yeah, so
I agree with you.
There are a couple of critiques of the UBI. Basically number one that it's really expensive. But there are a lot of other things that are also expensive and we managed to find money for those.
Right.
One interesting critique, I don't know, I still think it's a good idea, but I read one critique that's basically saying it's ableist in an interesting way, that actually people don't have the equal ability to turn $1,000 into like a better life. that actually it would end up disadvantaging people who didn't have the same type of access as another person. And so this woman, Elizabeth Anderson, is way more into the idea of social programs.
Sure.
That we owe each other not just the funds, but like the true ability, and getting $1,000 a month wouldn't like create the actual ability to have a better life.
I think that that's really valid, because like I think it's just a rose by another name, whatever the idiom would be, of like giving someone free housing or giving someone a certain amount of money. Like, for you to be like for one but against another, like, I need to hear your nuance, because they are similar ideas. Yeah. But it is interesting, like, to think about, like, is it better to give someone like a stipend for food and free housing? Like, can we just like get rid of landlords, and that would save a lot of people a lot of fucking money. Right? Because it's typically lower income people who can't afford to like get started with a mortgage. So it's like, is that the better solution? Is UBI the better solution? It's all, I mean, there's so many different places to target like getting started
with
this.
The place where I'm coming from, which is interestingly kind of slightly more like right leaning in a way, is giving someone $1,000 to do with what they will is more empowering in a lot of ways.
Totally.
And allows people to self-actualize in a way that just social programs might not necessarily. A really good example that actually my mom gave when we were talking about this is the idea of childcare. Like, you could give free childcare. You know, you could create a social program. Or you could give mothers enough money a month to either choose to stay home with their children or to pay for childcare so they can continue to work.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, they now have the option. If they wanted to go back to work, they could. Or if they didn't want to, they wouldn't lose money.
I love that.
You know?
Yeah. And that's why UBI I like as well. And also, like, this came up, I think we can all kind of approach this from like the discourse around stimulus checks. Like, a lot of people spent their stimulus checks on a lot of different fucking things. But I feel like everyone felt fucking good to have that much money in their account. Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And anybody who was like, I remember seeing so much stuff of like, I don't want to hear a fucking word from any of you if you see someone walking around with like crab legs, like, or like, I don't want to hear a fucking word from any of you if you see someone walk around with new shoes who like hasn't paid their rent in a month, like, go fuck yourself. Like, I think there is a really cool part of self-actualizing that's like, this money's for me, it's not for my fucking landlord.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, dude, I really love that.
Yeah. And actually this thing in San Francisco came out of COVID directly, and they said, if we give artists the ability to make art, we will help the economy. Is
like
their
rationalization,
which I
always
thought was pretty cool.
That's fucking
I'm interested
cool.
to follow this and to see the results, because obviously, like, they would need some sort of like it stimulates the economy results in order for it to like gain traction. And
it like does. So like cool.
Like we know that in our hearts.
Yeah, we know that. And also, like, the stimulus checks were proven to help with spending. I mean, like, it's all just fucking obvious to me. And also, like, there's an argument to be made that I think is really valuable around like the unpaid labor of homemakers,
right?
And just like the it's actually like there's a lot written about how this economy functions, because there's trillions of hours yearly logged by unpaid homemakers with like dishes, food, childcare, laundry, upkeep of a home. Like, that is unpaid labor. That is part of why this economy is working the way it is. Like,
and
they should
be necessarily
fucking paid.
Do I necessarily want that to be in the market? No, I don't. But do I want it to be an option for people who want it, like, to not think about it as labor, but to be able to live comfortably and do this stuff? Yes, I do.
And also
that.
Financial security, man. That's one of the biggest reasons why like people who stay, like, there's a huge disadvantage to staying home and not having your own income and the ability to like have financial safety and independence, regardless of, I mean, obviously that's mostly women, but regardless of gender, like, you should be paid. You should have, like you're saying, I guess you should have the option of being paid to do the labor that you are doing if you're a homemaker, because that is a form of safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And to bring it back to like opera, I feel like the cushion of like, if the UBI, you know, were to happen, which unfortunately I don't think it's about to happen, but how nice would it be to not to have that cushion of $1,000? How many more people would be able to continue working towards their opera career when otherwise they would have to kind of rethink things? Not that it's a bad thing to rethink things, but if you don't want to, you shouldn't have to, right? It would be kind of cool.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, when you look at how many opera houses are in Germany, let's talk about like subsidizing the arts as a
alternative to UBI for artists, right? Sure. Like, whatever. Like, but, like, they have children shows all the time. That's not even... Can you imagine having enough money in a budget to just do a show for children who, like, it's going to be, like, way less people in the audience and it's not going to be highly attended? Like, how do you even finance that? Or, like, the shows people do for, children on the spectrum who like need less lighting and less sound, and there's like really cool interactive things for that as well, but that's not financially feasible. We would have a much like richer society, and there's already examples of that around the world if we could just like have more artists working. And like we're so anemic. This whole culture in this country is so fucking anemic. So that's today's answers of things that obviously should be implemented, and we're just waiting. Andrew Yang, save us. Andrew. That's a joke. That's a joke. It's like a fucking Yang. Joke. I really don't. He's not okay. He's really not okay.
How should we close it out? I read a really cool, I've been like reading the Times. I know people like don't like the Times and it's problematic, but I read a really beautiful piece about aliens, an opinion piece.
What?
About like what would happen, like realistically what would happen if we found aliens. And this guy had a beautiful argument where he was, I think it was Ezra Klein. A beautiful argument where he was like, so many times when we've like figured out something big in our like scientific process, it's like spurred like really cool inventions, like it makes us like believe that we can do something, like if aliens made it here, then we would know that it's possible to like travel like that. And I feel like it would, he feels like it would like create this like push for like science and discovery, and it was beautiful.
Oh my God, I love that. Can you send it to me?
Yes, yeah. And then he talked about like, you know, for many thousands of years, we believed we were sharing this world with other sentient beings. It has been a very short amount of time that we have stopped believing that. And so we can begin to believe in it again. So cool.
Oh my God, I love that.
Makes me think about, it was Ryan who sent it to me. So shout out to Ryan, Paul's husband.
That's very fun.
Have you seen Arrival?
Mm-mm. Is that the thing you told me about?
It's one of my favorite movies. Maybe I told you about it.
I'm thinking of the lunch, the picnic.
That's Roadside Picnic. Lunch.
Yeah.
That's also a movie, The Stranger. It's a Tarkovsky movie. But this movie is about, it's with Amy Adams, and it's based on this book by Ted Chiang. And like 11 or something alien spacecraft appear on Earth, and they're like gigantic and no one can figure out how to get in them. They basically look like huge rocks.
Oh my God.
And I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but it's basically like a story about language and like communication. Mm. And these aliens have a completely foreign way of communicating that's like not hindered by time. It's like very like spherical and circular, and there's nothing like temporal about it.
Wow.
Really great movie. You should watch it. It's great. You should watch it with Greg.
Discord and Greg.
You and Greg would definitely love it.
Oh my God, I bet he's like seen it and he has like a whole idea.
Oh yeah,
about
he probably, he absolutely has.
You should text him about it. He'd probably be I wrote that.
Because
book.
We talked about, it's based on this short story by Ted Chiang, and we've talked about Ted Chiang. And I said, it's what the movie Arrival is based on. And he was like, oh my God, I love it. So I think, actually, I've already verified that he's seen it.
That's so funny. Wait, I'm obsessed. We should do that. I bet you a lot of people in the Discord would be down with that too.
Oh, it's such a good movie. Anyway,
But you know what that also reminds me of? And then I definitely have to go because I have to get to the butcher before 7 because I live in the 1900s. I don't know.
Mrs. But, like, Dalloway vibes.
Literally. But it also reminds me of like why I love Afrofuturism. Because it's like the same idea of like the inherent hope in like a larger world and a larger universe that is full of possibilities and just like hope in general. And just like something greater than what this is. And like, I think that I'm obsessed with Afrofuturism. Like, I think it's fucking great. So like, that's what that kind of sparked in me was like, cool. That's why I love talking about Afrofuturism so
very
much.
Cool.
Fuck yeah. Guys,
Hope you enjoyed. This went in so many directions, but I'm like very down, TBH. Yeah, hope you're also too. Very down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay. Okay. Oh my God. Last time we didn't say I'm blah blah and I'm blah blah, and this is thrilled to announce. And I'm sure you guys are like really not doing okay because of that. We wanted to send our condolences at this very difficult time. So on that note, I'm Charlotte,
and I'm Perry,
and we are
thrilled to. That felt like an improv game.
Yeah, you know the SNL skit where they like make it?
Yes! Should we spend 15 minutes doing that?
Yeah, and just make it up. Wait, we should do a whole episode that's improv. Maybe in like 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very far away from being able to do that. I've just been able to move away from a script. So.
Yeah. Guys, we're out here. 2021. Bye, guys.
Bye.